Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Breaking news tonight as we kick off Fast Money Live from the Nasdaq Market Site. I'm Melissa Lee. Here tonight, Carter Worth, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Bono and Eisen. In just the last hour, a roller coaster of news for the Bitcoin markets. The SEC appearing to send a tweet just after the market closed that said it had granted approval for Bitcoin ETFs to list on all registered national securities exchanges. The agency's official X account quoting Chair Gary Gensler saying, "Today's approval enhances market transparency and provides investors with efficient access to digital asset investments within a regulated framework." But minutes later, Gensler himself tweeted that the post was sent prematurely, saying, quote, "The SEC Gov Twitter account was compromised and an unauthorized tweet was posted. The SEC has not approved the listing and trading of spot Bitcoin exchange traded products." Let's get straight to Kate Rooney, who's got the very latest on this developing story. Kate.
Hey, Melissa. So we did get that tweet, that X post by the SEC official account, an SEC spokesperson later emailing saying, attributable to a spokesperson, they say the SEC's account had been compromised. The unauthorized tweet regarding Bitcoin ETFs was not made by the SEC or its staff. You mentioned Gary Gensler. I also just spoke to one of the issuers with a application out there. They said that they were in a bit of a panic mode. They said they had not gotten any word from the SEC. There was some confusion around that. It had also affected Bitcoin prices. You saw the price of Bitcoin slump and then later spike. So there is risk of potential market manipulation here. What that, you know, what the reasoning behind that tweet was and whoever did this. The other theory that I've been talking to a couple other sources who are saying that this could have, it's also being interpreted as a potential mistake. They're saying, was this a tweet that was drafted and then sent too early, which we've seen before on earnings. No word yet on exactly how this happened, how this apparent hack or unauthorized tweet happened, but absolutely affecting prices. And this has been this highly anticipated piece of news the market has been waiting for, expecting at some point this week. So the timing is quite suspicious, Melissa, but big market impacts here.
Kate, thanks. Keep us posted on what you find out. Let's get to Eamon Javers, meantime, with more on the SEC hack. Eamon, interesting, the SEC's got a problem on its hand in terms of the use of Twitter for market manipulation. This time, the target is its own account.
Yeah, they sure do, Melissa. And this is not new. We've seen this with Twitter accounts going back to 2020. There was an incident involving a number of high-profile people's accounts being hacked. That also was related to a cryptocurrency issue. So this happens around this crypto theme from time to time. In this case, though, I think the key word to look at in the SEC's statement to us is the word compromise. You know, Kate was just discussing whether or not this was sort of like a fat finger error on the part of somebody in the SEC comms department who tweeted out something by accident that had been drafted before. That's certainly a possibility, but the SEC uses the word compromised in their statement, which does indicate that they believe that somebody in an unauthorized way took over that X or Twitter account, however we're calling it these days. I think that's something to watch for. And because that has happened before, we can kind of trace where those come from. And generally speaking, what you're dealing with here is social engineering. A lot of times it's just a phishing attack where somebody gets the login credentials or a straight up bribery attempt of somebody who does have the login credentials for a high-profile account. And you can imagine that there are people who fit that description inside the SEC, but also potentially inside Twitter and or X under Elon Musk's management. You've got to imagine that there are quite a number of disgruntled former X employees or Twitter employees out there who would be susceptible to any kind of reach out like that. So there's a lot of possibilities here, but I focus on that word compromise as an indication of what the SEC is thinking, at least initially, about how this happened, Melissa.
So there are a lot of potential sources of the hack at this point, Eamon. And I think that what's interesting, too, is that this happens before an election year. So not only can companies be manipulated, but political news can be manipulated. Yep. And that can also move the markets, particularly in a hotly contested election year. And that's the bridge we're going to have to cross very soon. And this sort of just amplifies that issue.
It's a really important point, Melissa. Everyone I have talked to who is an expert in this space thinks that 2024 is going to be a massive year for disinformation because it's a political election year. We're going to see a lot of stuff happening on social media and elsewhere. This generative AI boom makes that potentially more nefarious. We're also going to see, experts have told me, more nation states participating in the U.S. election and trying to move results, move popular opinion through hacking and influence campaigns. So not just the Russians like we saw in 2016 with their influence campaign, but also potentially the Chinese, potentially some Middle Eastern entities, potentially the Iranians all participating in this election year this year. So bottom line, as we begin 24, the lesson here is be careful what you read on social media. Not all of it is true.
The other side of it, though, Eamon, is if it does come from within the SEC, that's also a huge problem. Imagine a hacker getting access to the Edgar database and filing a company filing, which is a fake one. I mean, that could easily move the markets as well. So, we've seen hacks like that.
We've seen hacks like that going back to 2015, right? I mean, there were hacks of PR wire services putting out fake press releases in a pump and dump scam designed to, you know, just capture a quick trade on those entities. In a lot of those cases, they are able to unwind who did it. It sometimes takes a year or more to figure out who did it, but people get caught doing this, and maybe that'll be the case here. We have to get more from the SEC on what exactly happened here. And interestingly, the SEC just put in place in December new rules for publicly traded companies, which have to disclose their cyber incidents in a more timely fashion. Let's see if the SEC follows those same rules itself and discloses all the details around this in a timely fashion.
Eamon, thank you. Keep us posted on any developments that you find out. Eamon Jabbers in Washington for us. This is just a fascinating story. I mean, when Karen and I were in the green room getting ready for the show, we were sort of looking at the approval, thinking that it was a real approval. And we were watching. You have sort of a playbook for when the approval actually happens, because we saw the markets move on the back of it. Until, of course, you found out that it was a hack.
I know. That was your observation, which is an excellent one, because it wouldn't be shocking to any of us to see this be a real piece of news.
In
the next few days, that wouldn't be surprising. So I don't know where the term prematurely came from, but he seems to there was no decision. So it's not like there was and they just haven't released it. But I don't know, it reminds me of the guy from the Global Association of Billionaires and Millionaires who made a bid for Marks and Spencer via a fake press release. This one is more real, looks more real. But I mean, we see it from time to time. It's just interesting to see. All right. Were you surprised by anything that traded?
Yeah, but I think the biggest issue is if you think it's market manipulation, if you told me that this tweet was going to come out and what Bitcoin would do one way or another, I wouldn't be able to tell you whether it was going to rally or sell off. Mm-hmm. So really, you got to come back to whether it was a compromised situation, the way Eamon laid out, or whether it was a hack. And if it's a hack, it's a serious problem, right? Compromise is more of a one-off situation. You got to broaden it out a little bit, right? So if we're talking about this election year, Eamon just told us how many different nation states want to push misinformation to kind of push their own agendas. And I think the biggest takeaway to me, and I've been saying this now for I think a year and a half or so, is that, you know, Twitter went from being this town square, right, this crowdsourced kind of town square sort of situation, to a single point of failure for so many different organizations who will rely on this to now be their mouthpiece to whatever their constituencies are. And there's, again, then throw in all this stuff with deepfakes and, you know, the pulling back from, you know, safety and protocols that are existing on this platform and the like, and we know that they've scaled back this group. So if you are an organization, whether you're political, whether you're a corporation, whether you're anything, and you are relying on this to talk to your stakeholders or for branding or anything like that, you're doing it wrong right now, because we've had 16, we've had 2020, we've had 2022, we've had all these situations over the last few years. And so to me, I just think it's funny that we're still talking about this, because it's the same thing we're talking about 8 years after we had an election that was co-opted.
We don't know if the compromise is from Twitter or from the SEC. Sounds like the SEC, right? And not Twitter, where they could have compromised their PR account.
But people have become accustomed to hearing official, you know, notices through this sort of thing, and they're giving validation to that.
Yeah, I think we can debate whether or not companies should or shouldn't, but I think we need to take into account the fact that they do. And the impact that social media has in terms of dissemination of information across the board, not necessarily just Twitter. So I'm with you. I mean, I think now that it's been taken private, clearly we have less insight into what the goings on are at that particular company. But this to Karen's point, this sounds like this was a failure in terms of the credentials on the SEC's point. And I think that should raise as much concern. That is our overarching governing body. And the fact that we're getting information that we've essentially been waiting for the better part of a few months in terms of the release of this, and we've been teasing up to this point, I think is equally concerning. So I do think clearly, you know, the things that have gone on at Twitter make it easy for us to attack there. I just do think that we should be holistic in how we look at this situation.
I mean, for what we know, the price action was in line with presumptions, right? You, if approval were real, you would expect some sort of reaction. It was up as high as 48,000. Of course, now we're down 5% from that peak. But I think the market, while anticipating approval, it still did move when it thought that approval was in hand.
Right. So what we saw move, I mean, if we were going to use this as sort of the playbook, we got the playbook for a Bitcoin ETF approval.
Correct.
For a window of 5 minutes. But in that 5 minutes, what do we see? We saw Bitcoin move down a little bit.
3% up.
Coinbase down a little bit, 1.5%. Certainly not the huge moves. We were going through all the different things we thought would move, and they weren't moving as much as you would think.
Yeah, although it did have a little bit of a buy the rumor, sell the news strategy, right? Like there's been so much excitement about this, and obviously Bitcoin has moved so much that you would think sell the news would make sense.
All right, let's bring into the conversation Rick Heitzman, the founder and partner at Firstmark Capital. Rick, great to have you with us. Interesting news that's happened.
Yes.
You sort of, you know, You are in that world, and I'm wondering, you know, what your take is. Is it the fault of Twitter? Is it, where would you go first?
I think it's too early to know, but I'd probably go to, you know, it's usually people who make these mistakes. Yeah. And is it the people at the SEC who had a fat finger mistake, or is it someone at Twitter, and are there rules? So I think the SEC has to go deeper on Twitter, especially as that organization's been generally gutted since it's gone private, and make sure that things that can affect the market, affect the political landscape, are handled properly.
For the companies that you're invested in, do they use Twitter as a way of disseminating market-moving information?
Constantly. Okay, so they announce earnings, they announce material hires, they announce all kinds of material things on Twitter. So that's really a place of record. And so if you're getting sold in M&A, which was the ultimate market-moving thing, you have to be locked down. So what does that mean? And I think it's probably even taken more seriously now than it did when Elon Musk was tweeting out, I'm going private at 420 a share. And, you know, and now more seriously everyone takes it, the more important it is for us to safeguard it.
Does this make you rethink? I mean, if Twitter was the point of failure, does this make you rethink, as somebody who's an investor in a lot of these companies, this is not a good way. We got to think of something else.
Or we have to increase the accountability. Mm-hmm. So is this a safe and trusted place where you can disseminate information, where you can manage your profile, and is this the way you're going to talk to your parties and interests, your customers, your investors, your stakeholders, or does there have to be a better way that people will move off to a Discord or move off to another channel where they feel like that's a more safe, secure place?
So, Rick, I don't know if you remember this, but we met on the set of Fast Money in November of 2013. It was the week that Twitter went public. Okay,
yes.
And you came on. I guess the question was, what is the next
short
what is the next internet stock? Your hair was a little darker. The next internet, what was the next internet stock to go public? Okay, that was what we were talking about. It was on the set downstairs. All right, when you think about this, let's bookend this to where we are right now, okay? Because Twitter would be well below its IPO price from November of 2013 right now. As an early stage investor, what do you see in the consumer space? What do you see in the social media space? Because the only company that's really been successful, I think, in the last 10 years has been TikTok. And TikTok has all the same concerns that we're talking about right now as it relates
security, misinformation,
and all that sort of stuff.
And maybe even more. So they're now asking for things like, what's your unlock for your phone? And so there's many more backdoors in TikTok than anywhere else. The problem has been that the consumer experience hasn't evolved, right? So the things that you look at what your kids use for social media apps, it's still Snap. It's still Instagram. It's still all those communication and messaging, that it's all in the old framework. You know, you need Discord has been the big winner and the big emergent power in social, but probably doesn't have the consumer scale or the name or brand recognition that some of the older players have. But hopefully this is, you know, what's the next version? Oh, the next version is more secure. The next version is more trusted. The next version is how, you know, companies talk to investors in a safe and secure way. So a lot of these crises create opportunity for the emerging companies.
who do you think would benefit? I mean, if people looked at Twitter and said, because of this, we understand now that Twitter may not be as secure as mm-hmm. we believe, what is the alternative?
I don't think it's threats. I mean, some people would say it's right. threats. I think threads is kind of DOA. I think you're going to move to, hey, could you have a Discord server? And that Discord server would have a lot more security around who joins the server, who's the administrator of the server, who's in and around it. And that has a whole bunch of different ways that people use Discord servers for commerce, for communication, for secure and private access that, you know, companies could turn and say, I need to have a better one-on-one relationship with my stakeholders, with my investors, especially as I'm announcing material non-public information. So how do I do this? And will someone work with me to create that safe and secure place? And I think that's probably a big opportunity. So if anyone out there is doing that, I'd love to hear from you.
You're looking for a new investment. Before we go off to talk about, you know, tech in general and investments, I'm just curious, you know, you're part of the tech community. And so when you take a look at these things happening as we enter an election cycle mm-hmm. where the possibility of these types of events happening more and more to potentially even more detriment. I mean, this was sort of a minor incident in that the damage was contained. It was caught quickly and it was denied that it was a real tweet. There can be another circumstance where we don't know that it's fake. Mm-hmm. It happens longer, and the effect is much deeper and longer lasting.
Yes,
in many ways. And so, who should be responsible? And I ask that sort of in a general societal sort of point of view, because the government would probably want to say we want to be responsible. The tech community probably wants to say no, we can be responsible. And yet, what have we here?
I don't think either of them could be as responsible because the quality of generative AI is increasing so quickly. That the quality of these deepfakes are so real, they're so good, and they can be created very easily and distributed very quickly. So I don't think anyone could have enough fingers to put in the dam to make this happen. I think the government moves too slow. The government hasn't set out regulations to do that. And I think the individual platforms, as hard as they try, are still susceptible. So there probably needs to be rules of the road, and I think with political ramifications or financial ramifications, someone needs to do something.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there, Rick. Great to have you with us.
Great.
Thanks for playing along with us.
No problem.
Heisman, First
Thank
for Capital. We're going to continue to follow the story. Any news we get, we'll bring it to you immediately. Meantime, we will continue our breaking news coverage right after this. A cybersecurity expert will join us. Fast Money's back in two.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Eli Lilly CEO David Ricks taking the stage at the J.P. Morgan Healthcare Conference this hour. In fact, should be there right now. We are watching the comments. We'll bring you all the headlines. Shares of Lilly closed the day just off record highs. The stock has been soaring on demand for its obesity drugs, but investors are also awaiting news of potential Alzheimer's treatments. Here's what Ricks had to say about that earlier today on Squawk on the Street.
The thing that probably at Lilly we're most excited about is what we call the Trailblazer 3 study, which is fully accrued now and will read out in a few years. This seeks to take people before they have Alzheimer's, have amyloid in their head, so the risk factor, and delay that diagnosis or prevent it. That's the goal of the study. We have to prove that, but that's a few years out.
So that, and then just in the next year or so, there are six basically trial readouts concerning tirzepatide and Eli Lilly for various trials. One is due out January 10th, a readout of a phase two trial using tirzepatide to treat fatty liver syndrome in obese patients and patients with type 2 diabetes. So there are a lot of different catalysts for the stock to move it higher here.
I mean, I don't know if how many of them are already priced in. I mean, there's a lot of excitement around this stock, clearly. And we were just talking in the break, there just seems to be one good news story after another here. I don't know if eventually there'll be one that isn't so good and it'll trade off. But also there is this other potential engine of Alzheimer's, right, which I don't know how much that's priced in. I'm long. It's hard to say on a valuation basis. You got to be there, but I'm staying long for the story.
Well, what does the chart say, Carter?
Well, I mean, talk about the definition up and to the right. But what's sort of interesting day to day is that this is basically the same price it was in September. So this sideways action after the preceding big move is the pause typically that allows you to go again. I would concur, as they say. I'd be long with you.
This is like the NVIDIA, a pharma, Bono in. And you own NVIDIA.
I do. I still do.
You own Lilly.
I do not own Lilly and wish I had, but I can't win them all. Listen, I'm in agreement with the others, although I will say I don't know what the incremental move higher comes from. I don't know what that catalyst is. If the roles had been reversed and essentially the Alzheimer's drug essentially had the move, I would say, okay, this obesity drug definitely can take things for the next leg higher. To Karen's point, how much of this is priced in? And so I just think part of it is just order of operations, and everything else is probably is seen as a secondary or tertiary effect after just the massive move that we've seen around these two particular stocks, Novo and Lilly.
Yeah, and I guess the story for NVIDIA going, you know, to $1.3 trillion in market cap is growing into that valuation. It's something that I kind of got a little behind last year when you're thinking about the TAM. The difference here is that people are not double and triple ordering GLP-1s. They are not thinking about what this means for hypertension, for fatty liver, for sleep apnea. I mean, the list goes on and on and on, right? So, like, this is a stock that if you're thinking about $18 in earnings in 2025, maybe $25 in earnings in 2026, it could easily grow into that valuation over the next couple of years. And Guy says, he's been saying this all year long, since the stock doubled in March, you just buy this stock on pullbacks. You don't have to buy it when it's breaking out like here. And to Carter's point, that it actually has gone sideways, much like NVIDIA did before it just ripped 15% in a straight line over the last week. But throw in all of these sorts of trials for other use cases for these drugs, okay? And then it just expands the addressable market for it. And then if there's any success in Alzheimer's, what are things that people, I don't want to be fat, and I don't want to get crazy when I'm old. And so those two things,
too late.
Right? Well, okay, thank you, Karen. And believe it or not, we are great friends.
I know,
people.
We are.
I just want to tell everybody
we
that.
All are, by
but
the
like,
way.
If NVIDIA, okay, got 15%, it got $150 billion in market cap in the last week because they're selling our biggest foreign adversary. AI chips. Okay, I think we could we could see this stock at $1 trillion at some point in the next few years, based on an Alzheimer's approval and GLP.
So embedded in that is a would you rather, and you'd rather Lilly over NVIDIA, even
100%.
Though you did like NVIDIA the other day. You're saying it does look.
Well, like I said that at 490, and I said from a chart perspective, from a trade perspective, from a whole host of other things. I did quote my main man Carter Braxton Worth. Yeah. That was the impetus for this thing, and I did say I see a breakout. This one is a long term invest. I mean, listen, the other one's great. It's fine. You know what I mean? Never sell your NVIDIA, people. But I'm just saying, at one point, NVIDIA is going to start to sell off, and you're not going to want to buy it because it's going to get cut in half. Lilly, their drugs are going to have to kill people for it to sell off and get cut in half. And
remarkably, like Lilly is not popular on the street. And you say, what are you talking about? The price target from 40 analysts is 1% higher. That's a 12-month price target. So it's hardly a consensus view that this has got a lot of upside. The view is actually that it's all priced in.
All right. There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Cinema Shuffle, the studio behind blockbusters like The Hunger Games and John Wick, is making some movie moves. What the new biz will look like, and the SPAC deal helping them get there. Plus, Tim flexed his bicep while Dan rode on his zebra trade. And now, Carter and Bonawin are laying out their 2024 acronyms. So grab a shovel and an adapter. They'll help you with these next picks. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Fast Money. While some media companies are fighting cord-cutting and other industry headwinds by consolidating their businesses, one key player is bucking the trend. Lionsgate announcing in December plans to spin off its studio business from Starz via SPAC, creating a dedicated public firm for its TV and film assets. The deal giving Lionsgate Studios an enterprise value of roughly $4.6 billion. Joining us on set in person to go inside the deal, Lionsgate Vice Chairman Michael Burns. Welcome back to the show, Michael. Great to see you in person.
I feel like I'm coming home to a new set.
You are. Welcome home. So tell us about this. It seems like this sets the company up to be bought. Is that the right takeaway from this?
I think it sets the company up to show real value to the shareholders. Everybody talks about the sum of the parts and yap, 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 and what happens is nobody does anything. We're actually going to show the sum of the parts by dividing the company, separating the companies, that Starz and Lionsgate, separate companies, are more valuable.
Well, part of the issue I think that investors had with the combined company was that another company might not be interested in the Starz part or vice versa. Now that you're separating it, somebody can come in and take the Starz and somebody else can come in and take the TV and studio assets.
Well, there's that too. So you have a different set of buyers potentially, or merger partners or strategic alliances with Starz, as you do with the studio. So the studio is that we're giving investors the chance to invest in the pure play content side of the business. So our library is over 20,000 titles with the E1 transaction. We have an enormous amount of content. We were talking about John Wick earlier. So I was flying on American Airlines here, and I got the last upgraded seat, and I was flipping through the movie section, and it was all movies. And I went through 50 movies, and 19 of the titles on the plane were Lionsgate titles. From Twilight, The Hunger Games, to Divergent, to John Wick. It was nice to see.
Wow. So you actually thumbed through all of the, I mean, the person next to you must think that you're just very indecisive.
Well, I was taking pictures. They thought I was insane.
The landscape, though, right now is that media companies, they have their own problems. They're burdened with debt. They have streaming platforms that are basically drags on their profitability at this point. If you think about some sort of partnership or some sort of a merger of the TV and studio assets with somebody else, who are those potential? What is a landscape?
Well, I think that if you look at Starz, by the way, is, in my opinion, misunderstood. They're making money. They're switching over to digital. Jeff Hirsch and his team are doing a really good job there. You'll know more about that at our next earnings call. They're growing. Their subs are growing. They're not losing, you know, billions and billions of dollars. Lionsgate is going to be a pure play studio. And we're in a situation where we want people to recognize what we have. The multiples on Starz versus the multiples on a pure play content business are usually very different. When we were a pure play content play, we traded at the mid to high teens on a multiple standpoint. Starz isn't going to get that kind of multiple, but we do believe there are very different potential partners on both sides of the business.
Yeah, you know, I've known Jeff Hirsch for a while. Great operator, too, and very creative guy. Let me ask you this, though. When you think about, like, the content, you said it's king right here, right? Like, what is one of the biggest misperceptions in the sentiment shift that we've seen towards streaming, right? We saw the kind of bundling, right, of delivery mechanism and content now. We're seeing a bit of unbundling, right, because let's say the public markets in certain instances have not really appreciated those combinations. What do you think some of the biggest misconceptions are, and why have we seen this sentiment shift over, let's say, the last 5 years or so?
Look, when we made a big investment, didn't work out internationally for Starz. We were just too early. It's like the entrepreneur or the venture capitalist that's too early. You know what you call them? Bankrupt. So we're in a position where we rolled out internationally a little bit too aggressively. We pulled that back. We've gone out of the international territories because we think we can make a lot of money domestically on Starz, particularly as they migrate to more digital. I think that the amount of money, we're not subject to what a lot of the other legacy partners are, where they've got these giant infrastructures and they have to feed the beast to keep their subscribers growing. So we're in a very different position. Starz is making money. Our studios, you can see we publicly filed it. We had a Form 10 that we filed. We projected through 25. We talked about how much money we're going to make post E1. This transaction that we're going out with is a 10.7 multiple of fiscal 25, which starts on April 1st. So we think we're pricing the first part of this transaction well. We've just finished a PIPE. A bunch of blue chip investors oversubscribed. So we feel when we do the rest of the transaction at the end of March, it's going to go pretty well. And then if we set the mark and the floor for the studio, and then obviously when you do that, you also set a mark for Starz. We think 1 and 1 is going to be a lot more than 2, and we're actually going to prove that to the marketplace.
So just on the SPAC structure, so you have the pipe. Do you have enough cash that you need that even if you see big redemptions that you're able to close?
There are always big redemptions.
Right. So yeah. You got to be, yeah.
We, if you do the math, it's a pretty big, it's a Harry Sloan SPAC. He's done very well. We had DraftKings. You had one of the original investors in DraftKings earlier. Only 23% of the $750 million has to stick for us to get to our number of $350 to $400 million. I will tell you that the roadshow that we did was very well received. We were oversubscribed. I expect it's going to go well. I'm pretty confident that we're going to close that in a nice place.
When you come back here on set at the NASDAQ market site in a year, hopefully you come back sooner, but let's say in a year, will Lionsgate Studio TV, will you have a partner? Are you actively shopping for one right now?
We're not shopping. What we're doing is we're looking at this in steps. We're looking, this is a very significant step to separating both sides of the business. We're going to have 13 to 15% of the studio trading publicly. The other 87 to 85% will be inside the parent company. Obviously, we're going to go towards full separation in the near future so that we set a value for both sides of the business. Is the company going to be sold? I don't know. Do I think that there are a lot of interesting potential partners? I can tell you that our library of over 20,000 titles with $875 million of revenue, high margin business, that's attractive to a lot of places. And I always laugh when some of the big streamers say, well, we're only going to make our own content and we're not going to license others. Cut to Suits, which does incredibly well, and then we license 4 of our television series. So our movies, our television series are in high demand. I don't think that's stopping anytime soon. And I think there are a lot of particularly strategic opportunities for us to align with somebody that can turbocharge a lot of the studio business.
Michael, great to see you. Thanks for coming by.
It's nice to see all of you.
Good to see
Michael
you.
Michael Burns of Lionsgate. Coming up, we've got more SEC headlines. A cybersecurity expert joins us next to talk about the hack. And we've got 2 more trader acronyms coming your way. Carter and Bonawin have their picks for 2024. We're going to dig into that later in the show. The big reveal when Fast Money returns.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks closing out the day mixed. The Dow and S&P trimming earlier losses, but still ending in the red, while the Nasdaq squeezed out a small gain. Its third positive session in a row. The OIH Oil Services ETF dropping more than 2% today. This despite crude finishing the day 2% higher as overseas tensions bumped prices. Crude still lower on the week after yesterday's losses. The FXI China Large Cap Index, meantime, hitting new 52-week lows, adding onto the losses from 2023. The FXI is down nearly 30% over the past year. And Tesla dropping more than 2% today, the company lowering its driving range estimates for several of its electric vehicles. This after a new U.S. testing regulation went into effect to make sure automakers are accurately showing real-world performance. Let's get more on the SEC Bitcoin headlines that broke in just the past hour. SEC Chair Gary Gensler saying an earlier tweet from the agency that said Bitcoin ETFs had been approved. That tweet was unauthorized. For more on the implications, let's bring in Dmitry Alperovich, Silverado Policy Accelerator's executive chairman and the co-founder of CrowdStrike. He joins us on the Fastline. Dmitry, great to speak with you.
Thank you for having me.
When you take a look at what's gone on, what's your initial take? What are the questions that you initially ask?
Well, this is a really big deal because this is actually the first Twitter hack that I can remember, and there have been so many of them, that actually was really, really smart and that was able to move the markets by $22 billion, almost $23 billion in market cap for Bitcoin. So someone could have really cleaned up here. This wasn't just a prank, as we've seen in the past, where they're posting some scam or some message that is really relevant to the markets. This was clearly designed to make some money here. And I'm sure that companies like Chainalysis and other blockchain transaction investigative companies are tracking this right now, trying to figure out who could have possibly benefited from it.
But when it comes to figuring out who might have been behind this breach, this hack, where would you go first as a security expert?
Well, I would be looking at the transactions on the blockchains. And, of course, the great thing about the blockchain is that everything is recorded. So even though it's pseudo-anonymous and you may not know exactly who's behind it right away, every transaction is available for you. So anyone that is placing bets on Bitcoin that it would go up right before this tweet, you want to look very carefully, and then anyone who's selling minutes into it is a potential someone who's potentially tied to this hack.
So basically, you're saying that you would trace who made the most money off this trade, and therefore you'd find the person who probably funded the hack of whatever it may be, whether it be Twitter or the SEC itself?
That's certainly the first lead you want to investigate. It doesn't necessarily mean that that person is going to be responsible, but it's as good of a start as any.
From your standpoint, Dimitri, is this easy to do? I mean, you mentioned this is the first hack where you saw money actually being made. And we've seen other instances fairly recently, I think within the past year, for instance, of a AI-generated photo of the Pentagon in flames, and that actually moved the S&P 500. I mean, there are various examples. Here you can actually quantify the dollar amount which which the Bitcoin market moved by, but there are other ways to move the markets as well. Is this easy to do in your view? I mean, if you're going to hire a hacker, can you do this?
It's certainly possible, but I can tell you, hacking an account of a major organization like the SEC is generally not easy. Many of them will have what's known as multi-factor authentication enabled, which means that you don't just need their password, you also need a one-time code that would be generated. And, you know, one thing that I'm really curious about here is that there's been another profile hack just on Friday of a major cybersecurity company that's usually also very good on security. So one of the questions I have right now is this a hack of SEC or their Twitter account, or is this potentially a problem with the X itself, the platform, where someone may have been able to get to the back end and reset passwords and gain access to a number of accounts. So it could be much broader than just this one organization that was compromised here.
So are you trying to link the two potentially? That, I mean, cybersecurity, you're only as strong as your weakest link, right? And so if you hire a cybersecurity company or any other company to do work for you, and there's a backdoor into that company, they then have a backdoor into yours. Are you saying that hack of the cybersecurity company on Friday could have contributed to this in some way?
No. What I'm saying is that someone could have hacked X or Twitter itself and gained
right,
access
okay.
to the accounts of both. So the fact that these are happening within days of each other is really, really suspicious. And we know that in the past, people have been able to get access to Twitter accounts by compromising the organization or social engineering employees within it or even bribing them. So it's happened before. We know that, of course, Elon has fired so many people inside the company. We don't know how many people are left inside their security team, so it's quite possible that the issue is on that side.
Is it your impression that Twitter's security is porous?
Well, it's been poor for quite some time, for many years, and I find it hard to believe that after firing more than half of the employee base, it's gotten any better.
All right. Dimitri, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much. Dimitri Alperovitch, Silverado Policy. And I guess I asked the question porous, meaning... you know, ways to sort of seep into it.
He thought it was poor, but if it's porous, it's poor.
But if it's porous, it's poor.
Yes.
That's for sure. All right, coming up, the Fast Money Trader acronyms. All week long, we are unveiling the names they are placing their bets on. One of them is getting electrical. The other is on the hunt for new real estate. That's next. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. This week, we are revealing the Fast Money Traders 2024 acronyms. They've been busy getting these names ready. Today, we have Bonawin and Carter. So, Bonawin, we'll kick it off with you. What is your acronym for 2024?
2024 acronym is DIGS. And so let's start with the D, DXJ. As you know, I've been bullish Japan. Clearly, there's been, you know, the earthquake and perhaps a little bit of movement in terms of monetary policy. So I want the hedged version there. I also think that, listen, M&A is probably here to stay, particularly in the healthcare space. IBB, I want exposure to those smaller companies that are likely going to drive growth for the larger players. G, gold. Listen, I think it's an understatement to say, truly, this can be a binary year. We expected a recession last year. It didn't happen. Now we're expecting rate cuts. Those may not happen. Gold gives me some comfort there and is a hedge against reflation. And then small caps. Again, me trying to find a home run here. So if there is going to be growth and continued upside, I think that next leg likely comes from small caps.
All right. Carter, what is your acronym?
Plug. This is what I'm plugging. PLUG. So we've got two small caps. P is for Peloton. L is for Lincoln National, 120-year-old life insurance company. Both are around 2 to 4 billion market cap, so small. UNH, that's the 11th largest stock in the entire market at $500+ billion, big, dedicated, safe healthcare name. And G is for gold, GLD or gold. So PLUG. We've got a financial, we've got a consumer discretion, we have a commodity, and we have a big healthcare name, two small cap, one super cap, that's UNH, and one commodity, GLD.
What's funny is that somebody picked up Peloton because Tim had the acronym BICEP. And the P, when Guy was trying to dissect what BICEP stood for, he thought P might be Peloton, but it was actually PayPal. So that's just a swing from the fence, is sort of it's going to get taken
down. Well, these are, it's a lotto ticket, same as PayPal. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about things that are down 70, 80, 90% that are basing, and either they're just going to walk along and do nothing or come to life.
Mel, how old is this show?
Oh, 17 years.
Okay, so we've been doing this acronym thing for a long time. And Guy is the GOAT. He's the OG. He's the only one. Okay. Who is S? Small caps? Dude, we do tickers. Like, what do you, like, seriously?
Like, it should be Russell.
Yeah.
So, Mel, you said you wanted to fight before the show.
I'm not, I didn't want
to. You got one. Good job.
So change it to Giddy. Gold. What was I?
So we're going to have fun with the way you do the acronym game all year long. Okay. I'm just telling you.
Rules are made to be broken.
All right, fair enough.
But which instrument are you using to reflect small caps?
IWM.
Okay.
So then it's Digi.
Digi.
You could have been Digi.
Let's just change that. Sandy, can we get on that? Please, Digi. All right,
work on it, he says. Sandy, our executive producer, says he'll work on it. Coming up, I'm sure it's top of his list, biotechnicals. We are turning through the charts for a look at what could be a year of M&A madness and more for the space. The Chartmaster will deliver his top picks right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Earlier this hour, we spoke about Eli Lilly trading near all-time highs. Merck also setting a record today. But is there more room to run for any of these pharma names? The Chartmaster's three picks in healthcare, he says, are way better than a pair of twos in 2024. Carter.
Well, we shall see. But I got three names. Two are up and to the right, stay long, be long. And then the third is something that's really lagged that is coming to life. But let's go one at a time. So the first, and you'll see it on the screen, is Regeneron. That is the definition of a steady orderly uptrend with nice checkbacks, which is, say, countertrend moves, which reset the stock, stay long, be long. The next is Vertex. These are both sort of 100 billion plus VRTX, and you almost can't see that the chart changed. Again, the definition of an orderly uptrend and so much better than the healthcare sector. Now, the third is a different circumstance altogether, a real laggard. Right. And you can see it here, Medtronic, something that really took a hit, but has all the elements of a base and a bottom, or what I would characterize as a bearish to bullish reversal buy.
All right. Vertex is sort of interesting from a fundamental standpoint. They're developing a non-opioid painkiller, which could be the holy grail in the opioid markets. But I think everybody here likes healthcare to some extent.
Yes. I mean, well, some of the stocks that I've owned just had a terrible 23 after a great 22. Names like Merck didn't do well. Pfizer, of course, my Pfizer, really did terribly. I don't know if that's bottom. Bristol Myers also one of them. But I think there's a lot of value in the space.
Yeah.
XLV, interesting way to play it. And so you look at the top three holdings. Eli Lilly's about 10%. Your UNH there, Carter's about 10%. And then you have Johnson & Johnson, Merck, and the rest of them. And that has just rallied 15% from 52-week lows in 2.5 months to new 52-week highs, broke out. That looks interesting to me, especially if it were to pull back to that kind of breakout level. That might be a good level to start getting into the XLV.
Yeah, I just really think that 2023 has kind of changed the dynamic in terms of how we think about healthcare. It's traditionally viewed as a defensive, but if we didn't see growth in 2023 from these names, I think that I don't know what you're expecting. So I think it gives you actually a barbell within a subsector.
I mean, healthcare's relative performance to the S&P peaked in 2015. We're coming up on a decade of a struggle. And then you had all the sort of plunging names associated with Ozempic and what was going to go out there, then the recovery. And now the question is, this third largest sector, right, in terms of weight in the S&P, is it going to generate alpha in 2024? And that's the bet, right? I mean, as a portfolio manager, do you over or underweight a group, a theme, a sector? And at this point, my own hunch is it's going to be a market performer, not a big outperformer, but will pace the S&P.
So far, it's been generating, it's been doing better than the S&P.
That's right, after particularly bad, particularly bad 2023.
All right, meantime, we've got some breaking news on a deal that we've been waiting for basically all day here. HPE, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, is making it official and saying it is acquiring Juniper Networks in an all-cash deal, valuing the company at $40 a share or $14 billion. That's more than 8% higher than where shares closed today, 35% above where they closed yesterday before the headlines broke. What do you make of this deal initially?
Interesting. We're seeing this, though, across the tech space in general. Low-growth companies looking for slightly higher growth. But it's more about the end markets in which they serve. And I think that probably serves HPE pretty decently as it relates to Juniper. But this is a company, man, I remember it. This was one of the biggest bubble stocks back in the day. And to see it go out for $40.
I mean, think it was $250, and it's going out for $40.
All right. Up next, final trades. Time for the final trade. Let's go around the horn. Carter.
Lincoln National Life Insurance. A bombed out stock that looks to be bottom.
Karen.
Yes, all this talk about healthcare. One way to play it is the IBB biotech.
Dan, I'm glad you mentioned Fast Money's 17th anniversary.
Oh.
Yeah. 17 years.
Happy.
Quite a crazy.
Feat. Yep.
I like his Digi. And I'd be a buyer of XLV on pullbacks.
Bonwin likes his Digi too, except he calls it Digs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in other news, if an SEC hack and a run on digital gold doesn't make you want the real thing, I don't know what will. GLD.
All right, thanks for watching Fast. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/fastmoneydisclaimer.
From their innovative practice facility to unmatched views from the fairway, the PGA of America is helping lower scores and elevate fan experiences with 5G solutions from T-Mobile for Business. Together, we're using AI-powered analytics to expand coaching tools and bringing fans closer to the pros with 5G-connected cameras. This is game-changing innovation. This is the PGA of America with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.